Report. Welcome into the Echo Sports Report. I am Troy Olson. You can find me on Twitter at Casey Royalman. I'm joined, of course, by the great Jeff Herr. You can find him on Twitter at the Jeff Report. And of course, find all of your great Echo information, both sports and otherwise, at echonetwork.com. It's the first week of the NFL season. The NFL season kicked off with the Giants and the Cowboys, seeing the Cowboys beat the Giants last Wednesday. We're into the second week of college football, second week of high school football for the state of Kansas, third week for the state of Missouri. And, of course, it's still Royal season, but if you want to hear about that, you can go listen to the Kansas City Baseball Vault, which you can find on Echo, as well as going to royalmanreport.com. Jeff will be taking you through this week mostly, but, you know, Jeff, it's been an interesting week. A lot of people are already counting the Chiefs out. I listen to Fantasy Focus, and they do their pick'em picks every week, and it was split half and half that the Arrowhead advantage would be enough to get the Chiefs a first win here. Tony Gonzalez is coming home. The Chiefs are short some defensive players. Tom Holley out with a drug violation. Could be a very interesting week for the Chiefs. What do you expect out of this first game?
Well, to be honest, if you listen to if anybody listened to the Echo Sports Report, I believe it was the first episode we did with Chris and I actually predicted this as a loss, and that was after the first week of training camp, and that was when Tom Bailey was still going to play, and that was when Brandon Flowers and Kendrick Lewis were healthy, and there weren't stinker preseason games like we saw and things like that. So, I mean, I'm sticking with that. I still think they're going to lose. Just simply, even at full strength, I just think Atlanta's probably a better team. They've got a little bit more than the Chiefs are. I think the Chiefs could have a, if things fall their way, they could have an elite defense. It'll most likely just be very good. But even so, I mean, the I don't know of many defenses in the league that can really handle what the Falcons are going to give them. So with our best pass rusher and the best defensive back and your third best defensive back possibly out, it just doesn't spell for anything good. You know, I mean, I still think that it's close. I never thought it was going to be a blowout in any way, and I still don't. If I had to make a prediction, I'd say like a 31-24 type of thing. You know, I think the Falcons are going to drop 30 points on a lot of teams this year. And this early in the season, without Tom Bailey and Brandon Flowers, I think the Falcons are going to come out and jump in. And it could be one of those things where, you know, God, I hope it's not, but it could be something like it was last year where, you know, you get out there and everybody's pumped up for the first game of the season, and before you turn around, it's 14-0, and you're going into halftime down a few scores, and it's like, well, where are we going from here? You know, so hopefully that's not the case and it doesn't end up that way. But if I'm being completely honest, I think it's going to be a loss. But, you know, like I said, I predict that the whole way, and I think the Falcons are just a really good team. So, you know, there's only so much you can expect, and I didn't expect the Chiefs to win this game either way, so I'm not going to be too disappointed if they come away with a loss, but, you know, I still definitely think they have a chance to win. There's going to be some things they have to do right, and I don't know if they're going to be able to do those things right. I mean, they're going to have to, I think the Chiefs are bread and butter all year is going to have to be running the ball. I'm not saying anything new by bringing that up, but specifically in this game, not only just running the ball, but Keely, you know, establishing that run game to have a time of possession advantage, because the only way you can stop the Falcons from using all their weapons and scoring is just by not giving them the ball. So that's what the Chiefs are going to have to do, number one. And then number two, it's going to be up to Romeo Crennel. I think that's the biggest thing. He's going to have to prove his worth as a coach and a defensive coordinator and say, hey, I have a cornerback in Brandon Flowers who, if he plays, is not going to be at 100%. I'm without my best pass rusher. I'm without one of my safeties. I have to scheme this thing, and I have to take care of those disadvantages the Chiefs are having in this game. You know, I think he was excellent at that when it came to New England. There, a lot of their defensive personnel in some of those years where they were winning championships was you know, average or so. But Romeo Crennel was able to put them in positions, put them in proper schemes for certain games to actually succeed, and I think that is the thing to look for. is Romeo Crennel really going to be the coach that's going to take these Chiefs to the promised land? I'll tell you what, if they can go out there and he can find a way to change their scheme to where they're not giving up 31 points to the Falcons and maybe they only give up 17 or 20 and end up winning this game because of how well their defense plays, then I think you look at legitimately thinking, hey, maybe Romeo Crennel is this guy that can take the Chiefs to the Super Bowl. I'm not saying this year. I'm definitely not saying the Chiefs are going to go to the Super Bowl this year. But, you know, with the way this team has been built and with maybe, you know, another year, if nothing happens this year, something like this could really show that Romeo Crennel could be that guy to take them to the promised land, you know. But that's just like everything, whether it's Royals, Chiefs, or anybody else in Kansas City, there's a lot of ifs in that statement.
Well, it's going to be an interesting day for sports today. It's going to be an interesting day tomorrow. I'm kind of excited. Being a baseball fan first and foremost, it's hard this time of year to get excited because baseball's so bad. But just a quick wraparound. Of course, we're recording this at 12:10 Central Time on Saturday, so games are underway. Mississippi State leads Auburn 7-3. Big SEC games all around. This is the first one of the day. It's kind of interesting to see Mississippi State coming out good in this first half. We'll see where they go with that. Any team in the SEC can be great any given week. That's why that conference is so hard, which A&M and Missouri, I think, are going to learn this year, and it's going to be hard years for both of them. At 7:30 tonight, Nebraska plays UCLA. Nebraska will be without Rex Burkhead, so the number 16 ranked team without their number one running back, who pretty much will be out of Heisman contention because of missing pretty much the entire first two games of the season. Broke off like a 60-yard run the first game and before getting hurt. But many believe that Nebraska can beat UCLA without him, but that's hard to lose your best player. USF is tied with number 14, Oregon at 10 apiece. That's interesting to see that a team that's probably going to win. I think that's Oregon. I'm sorry. I better double check that. No, I'm sorry. Ohio State. UCF tied with Ohio State, number 14 in the country, at 10 apiece. The Big Ten's really down this year, and really any of these teams could get beat at any point. So I'm not too surprised with UCF holding court with Ohio State. I think you'll see this game go Ohio State's way when it gets later, and when we look back at things next week, I think it'll be pretty obvious. The biggest surprise of the day so far, and they just scored again, number 21 Kansas State, who was only a 7-point favorite at home against Miami of Florida, the Miami Hurricanes, are now up with 6 minutes remaining in the first half. They're up 23-3. Jeff, did you have any idea that K-State was good? Now 24-3 after the extra point. Did you have any idea that K-State was going to look this good against Miami?
No, I mean, I don't think it was an unpopular pick to have them winning the game. I think that's actually where most people were going. But to see them look this good, I mean, Miami is down. They are really down. But to see them look as good as they have been so far, I mean, that's impressive. You know, that's regardless of how good Miami actually is, they've still got that name out there, and they're still the U. So people are going to take notice on that, and there's going to be a lot of national attention thrown towards K-State's way. I mean, they won 11 games last year. They won 10 games last year. Was it 10 or 11? I definitely know they won 10, but I don't think they, either way. I mean, they won 10 games last year and had a great season. So, I mean, you know, a lot of people picked them sixth in the Big 10. I saw a lot of preseason, Big 12. And I mean, I thought that was low back then, but I think this is going to have a lot of people kind of waking up and saying, hey, they're definitely contenders for this thing. You know, even as good as West Virginia and Oklahoma may be, I think K-State's right there with them. They've got to be.
Curtis Kitchen picked them number 10. So, picked them 6th. We got 10s everywhere that we don't need them. Picked them 6th in the Big 12 as well. And, I mean, that's the team that he writes the most about at CurtisKitchen.com. So, it's definitely interesting to see how they're coming out firing so well so quick.
Yeah,
go ahead.
I do think you also have to kind of wonder, too, though, for a second, you know, how much of this is K-State looking good or better than we might have thought, and then how much of this is the fact that just Miami is just a bad football team right now. I heard a lot of stuff on the sports radio this week, people talking about I'm talking to sports writers and radio personalities from down in Miami, and they were all saying the same kind of stuff, that just Miami's not a good football team. So, I mean, they still have some good talent. I mean, you can't not have good talent from a team in Florida for the most part, but it's still, they're not trying to take anything away from K-State, but you do have to kind of step back and say, hey, you know, Miami's not the Miami they were 10 years ago, and definitely not 10 years ago, and not even 5 years ago, or even last year, because their talent has drawn pretty thin.
A lot of jokes being made about Miami being downgraded to a tropical storm, so.
That's actually pretty good.
So I've seen that several times on Twitter today.
But keeping with college football, I mean, the biggest thing that everyone's been talking about is MU's welcome to the SEC party in Columbia against the Georgia Bulldogs. Everyone who knows, listens to either of the shows that I've been on, knows I'm not an MU fan by any means. I don't know what to expect, to be honest with you. I mean, I think there's so many people out there talking about how I think Missouri's got a real legit shot at winning this game. I think they're gonna, they're right there with Georgia. And then I look at the SEC and then Georgia and the rest of those teams, and I think, I mean, they just have so much more talent and so much more depth than just anywhere in the country. I mean, I'm just anxious to see it, to be honest with you, because I'm curious as anybody else, how is MU going to stack up? You know, I think frontline talent, I think your starters and your elite players, you know, Mizzou, especially the last, say, 3 to 5 years, might be able to compete with some of those mid-tier SEC teams like Georgia. I mean, LSU, Alabama, those teams out of the question. But like a team like Georgia, I think their top talent could probably compete. But then, you know, you're talking in professional football, you say 1 to 53. You know, I think it's like 85-man rosters in college or whatever. So 1 to 85, you know, I think once you get to that 20 to 85 range, that's when the SEC just blows everybody else out of the water. So it'll be interesting to see how much that actually comes into play and whether or not a team like Mizzou can compete, you know, not only now but in the future.
Well, and it's funny you call them a mid-tier team when Georgia's ranked number 7 right now. So you have the number 7 team in the country coming into an unranked Missouri team, which a lot of people do believe that Missouri at home, first ever SEC game, that they're really going to show up and play hard. And, you know, for the sake of the area, I do hope they win. I don't claim to be a Mizzou fan or KU fan, but I do hope they win. But for the sake of some of us here at Echo Sports, it wouldn't be too bad if they lose either, because it sure would be a fun week for some of us.
And the mid-tier team thing was more a reference to program and just, you know, overextended period, you know, over the last 5-10 years or so, what Georgia has been as a program, and for the most part it's been a mid-tier, similar to like an Arkansas or Mississippi State actually had a couple of years where they were really bad. But, you know, some of those, like South Carolina the last 10 years, been kind of that mid-tier SEC team. So that's kind of the reference. But then again, I do believe, I haven't checked the rankings recently, but I think the SEC has like 5 teams in the top 10 anyway. So
yeah, it's pretty sick.
They could finish 8th in the country if you're Georgia, but finish 5th in your own conference. So that's how – but, yeah, I mean, more than anything, I honestly can't make a prediction between MU and Georgia. I really couldn't. I just don't know enough about either team and don't know enough about what to expect with so many emotions and everything running high. But, man, I'm just curious more than anything else. I mean, for one of the first times in my life, I may sit down and watch a Mizzou game with no other reason than I'm just curious.
It'll be an interesting game, to say the least. Let's continue with a quick top 25 wrap around, and then we'll hit the last local team who is not ranked.
Who is last for a reason this time.
Right. A quick wrap around here. South Carolina is leading early in the second quarter, 14-0 over East Carolina. That's not even going to be close when it's all said and done. Ball State is hanging with Clemson 13-7 early in the second quarter. I would expect Clemson to win that. They're 12th in the country. Number 15, Virginia Tech, plays Austin, PA later today. That game doesn't really deserve to be talked about much because Vatek's going to roll them. Number 22, Notre Dame, will get an okay challenge from Purdue, but I can't see any way that Notre Dame doesn't win that game. Number 23, Louisville, welcomes Missouri State. So another local game, you could say, but I can't see any way that Missouri State competes in that game. How crazy would this area get if Missouri State even just only lost by, like, a field goal?
Yeah, I mean, there are a decent amount of Missouri. My sisters both graduated from Missouri State back when it was Southwest Missouri State. So I think you start to see some of those Bears fans crop up if they pulled off some sort of an upset or at least made it close. So it'd be interesting. It'd be fun.
Number 19, Michigan plays Air Force. Michigan could very well be the best team in the Big Ten, and I hate saying that because I hate Michigan, but this should be an all-Michigan show here later today. Number 2, USC against Syracuse. They should still be number 1. Yes, Alabama probably will end up the number 1 team in the country, but I hate it when a team gets dropped down without losing or even looking bad in their game. Of course, Alabama rolled their opponent last week. USC should roll Syracuse at Syracuse today and continue their undefeated ways. Number 24, Florida goes into Texas A&M. This one is one that I could see being an upset, and with it being kind of an SEC game, being an SEC game, but being something that our local area, but nationally, is going to be interesting to people, because if A&M can't compete with Florida, they're going to have in A&M, they're going to have a lot of trouble in the SEC. Any thoughts on this game?
Yeah, you know, I'm similar. It's similar to the MU Georgia game, where I am just really curious more than anything else. A&M, I don't for them. When I look at the switch that both A&M and MU made last year, I look at MU and I thought, you know, they might have actually. I mean, they were kind of close to turning that corner as a football program, and still are, and so. Moving to the SEC made sense for them. It opens up big-time recruits. It opens up a lot of recruiting pipelines and allows them to get a lot more national exposure for their, you know, rising football program. But A&M has just been on the decline for the last 5 to 10 years in their football program. And their decision to switch to me seemed more like a hissy fit, really. It was just, hey, you know, we're just as big as Texas, and Texas getting their own TV or our own network, and why can't we get this? And this is unfair, and we're just as big as Texas, and we're just as big a deal, blah, blah, blah. And it's just shut up, you know, and they finally just decided to leave. And so I think that was a worse decision on their part than Mizzou's, regardless of how it turns out for either of them. So I'm really curious on this, because the A&M, I mean, if they're not careful, could be one of those SEC doormat types for the next couple of years, just because they don't have the talent even that a Mizzou has, and they are not that good of a team, even as down as Florida is. So it'll be interesting to see how they stack up.
Well, and I'm going to talk more about the whole Texas part of everything here in a little bit, because I want to get into the Big 12. Big news nationally, the money that the Big 12 got, but then we're gonna finish this wraparound, and then we'll talk about that real quick. Alabama's going to roll Western Kentucky. It's not even going to be close. On Alabama, though, did you hear about Nick Saban getting on the local Alabama press for being too happy with how the team was doing?
I heard a little bit about that.
I encourage everybody to go out and find the interview, because it is absolute money, and I wish I had it and I could just try to play it through the speaker here for the show, but I don't have it handy. But he essentially got mad at the press for being too high on the team, and it apparently gets in the heads of the players, he thinks, and they don't play as well the second week. Well, you're not going to have anything to worry about with Western Kentucky. But, yeah, he got on – you would have thought that the press was talking crap about the team, because he got all over the press for being too positive. So definitely go check out Nick Saban going off on the press being too positive.
Yeah, I mean, I think that was just a situation of hey, I want to make a public kind of reality check for my team, because there shouldn't be, you know, we don't want them to get too high on themselves in the second game of the season, because they beat a top 10 team in Michigan last week and they smoked them. But then again, Michigan may very well have not been a true top 10 team. They might have gotten a little bit more benefit of the doubt than they should have. So I just think that's your classic kind of let's take a step back and look at what we are here type of thing from Nick Saban, more than he really thinks Western Kentucky is all anybody to be reckoned with.
Gosh darn it, my screen just updated. I'm using ESPN here, and they updated my screen, and I lost my spot. Bear with me just a second here. Continuing with the wraparound, Michigan State goes to Central Michigan today. They're Michigan State's number 11 in the country, another team to be reckoned with in the Big Ten, and they will win easily today. Wisconsin, number 13, goes to Oregon State. Should be no trouble for Wisconsin. Number 13 in the country, should continue on their run. Florida State has probably the best cupcake of the day. Number 6, Florida State is at home against Savannah State. That's definitely a paycheck for Savannah State, and it's going to be a beating for them as well as Florida State goes down in there. Fresno State trying to play with the big boys today, going to Oregon. Oregon's number 4 in the country. I don't see any way that Fresno State keeps this game close.
No.
Arkansas will get a beat. Number 8, Arkansas will beat up L.A. Monroe today in Arkansas. And number 3, LSU, will get a tee off on Washington tonight at 7 p.m. That's Saturday night. Number 5, Oklahoma will beat up Florida A&M tonight. Number 20, TCU against Grambling State at TCU. We already talked about Mizzou and Georgia. That's at 7:45 tonight on ESPN2. I can't believe that it's on the deuce, honestly.
That's Eastern time. I think it's 6:45 our time.
That is true. I should have noted that. And honestly, probably by the time people listen to this, it'll be Sunday or better anyways.
Yeah.
If they're listening live. Texas gets New Mexico, and it's Texas at home. Texas is ranked number 17. This will start off a good season for them. They'll have an easy win here. And number 18, Oklahoma State goes to Arizona, but should have no trouble on the road. Should be an easy win for them. And Stanford gets Duke. Stanford's 25th. Duke is not a football team. So it'll be an easy win for the Stanford boys as well. This might be something I try to add to the show, Jeff, if you're down with this, is kind of doing this top 25 wraparound, adding to what we consider our local teams. I mean, we make no bones about it. We record this show from Kansas City, but being a sports reporter, there's no reason it can't have more of a national feel to it. So I just kind of added that in as I started going through things this morning. Didn't even really give Jeff a heads up that I was going to do it because it just kind of formed out of the notes that I was prepping here the last few minutes. But if you like that or if that's something you don't want, let us know. You can shoot us an email at royalmanreport@gmail.com or hit us up on Twitter at Echoes Network or at the Jeff Report at KC Royalman. We always welcome your comments and want your opinions on what we're doing. Last game of the day we talked about briefly in the Kansas City Baseball Vault, and that is KU versus Rice. I have been offered free tickets at my work the last 2 weeks to KU games, and I cannot give them away. There is still a stack from last week sitting by one of the microwaves at work because nobody picked them up. Is KU able to win today against Rice?
I think, yeah. I mean, I think if you're a average to above average FBS team, like, you know, if you're Mizzou or especially if you're Oklahoma or, you know, any of those teams, I mean, you're going to just crush Rice. Now, I say that because I think KU is going to win, but I think it's a close game, close relatively speaking, of course, like, you know, 10 points maybe or something like that, where it's, you know, KU might score a lot, but like a 41-31, 41-27 type of game, I could see something to that effect coming just where they give up more points than they should to a poor team like Rice, but, I mean, that's what KU's going to get. So, I mean, it'll be good for them to start the season 2-0 if they can get the win. I think they will win, but I don't think it's going to be impressive by any means.
And on that note, we are going to talk about the Big 12 new TV deal with ESPN and Fox, but we're going to take a quick break, and I'll be right back.
Hi, I'm a woman, and I listen to Bugcast Podcast.
Hola, soy mujer. Yo oigo a Bugcast and Bugcast.
And when I do, it makes me hornier than a hoot owl at midnight.
Cuando pensar de eso toda la noche, como jodiendo a chingazos.
If you think Zac Efron's sexy, you haven't seen anything yet.
Si piensas de Zac Efron es guapo, no has mirado nada todavía.
Look out, David Beckham. You're not the only one with just your underwear on.
Cuidado, David Beckham. Tú eres el único que no tienes calzones también.
Bugcast makes me feel so good. Jealous much?
Me siento muy bien con Bugcast. Me hacen celosos.
Listen to a new episode of Bugcast, released every Monday.
Before we went to break, we did talk a little bit about the KU-Rice game, and this game is going to be really big for KU. They really need a win against a team like Rice to prove that they can hang with anybody, because beating Rice would be a step in the right direction towards a Big 12 schedule that's going to be unforgiving. And has how many teams in the Big 12 do you think are better than Rice? All of them?
Yeah, I want to say all of them. I mean, Kansas and Iowa State, I think, are both – they're right there. You know, I mean, if there's 130 teams in Division One, I mean, if Rice is in the top or the bottom quadrant, then, you know, KU and Iowa State is probably the bottom of the next tier up, if you will. So it's pretty close, but I think Rice would probably be the worst team of the Big Four.
And I'm watching Twitter here. You know, you can find us at Echo Network, and then, of course, Casey Roman and the Jeff Report, like I said. We've got a conversation going with J.W. Geist, G-E-I-S-T, a good friend of the show's, and Mike's one of Mike's best friends, Mike Engel from Kings of Kaufman. And, you know, he was asking what time we normally do the show live. It's normally done live. We start off with the Kansas City Baseball Vault. That's still hard to remember. We changed the name. We start with that about noon on Saturdays and then roll right into the Echo Sports Report. And, James, I would have to talk it over with Jeff, but I think a fantasy football segment might be very interesting as part of our NFL segment. So make sure you have Google Plus and have a camera and a mic, and if you have that, we can probably make it work out, but we can talk more about that later. They turned the fountains red in Kansas City today, as it is – oh, shoot. Actually, I'm going to stop. I apologize. I'm going to stop. I need to back up. I skipped one piece of news I wanted to do before we got to the NFL, and that was the Big 12 signs a $2.6 billion deal with ESPN and Fox Sports. This coming from any news source you want, but I'm looking at SportsIllustrated.com right now, which – you know, the Big 12 announced a 13-year deal with ESPN and Fox Sports on Friday that is reportedly worth $2.6 billion, and it's going to last for approximately 13 years. If any team leaves the conference during that time, they give up their rights to national broadcasting, I believe it is. And so it pretty much is going to guarantee that no team will leave the Big 12 for the next 13 years. It makes it so that each school is going to get about $20 million a year. It looks like that it's going to be equal across the board, which is kind of surprising because when the Big 12 was hanging on by a string, Oklahoma and Texas were wanting more of the money. But then Texas also has their own deal that's worth about $20 million a year. So, well, actually, this might include the Longhorn Network. I'm not sure. Do you know if this deal is on top of the Longhorn Network or it's going to be rolled into it as part of it?
I would assume it would be separate from the Longhorn Network, but I haven't had much time to dig real deep into it and see what all the deal is.
Here's what it is. Before, the Big 12 wasn't going to allow Texas to broadcast any Texas football games that were conference games on the Longhorn Network, and this deal will include games on ABC and all of the ESPN platforms, including the year-old Longhorn Network. Fox Sports is also part of the agreement, providing games on the Fox Networks and its cable platforms. I believe, and I'm trying to look through this, I should have had better notes on this, but I think Fox's portion is only for football, and ESPN got all of the Big 12 basketball, which is a big deal because Texas and Kansas have amazing basketball programs. K-State, usually competitive. Oklahoma, same way. So some great basketball programs. So that's going to be really good to know that ESPN will have a lot of the Big 12 basketball games. that'll be going on. This deal is huge for the Big 12. It ensures that the league's going to be together for 13 years. I thought the Big 12 was dead, not because Nebraska left, definitely not because Colorado left, but losing Missouri and A&M really put the microscope on the Big 12 on how they could survive. And when I talked to Greg Doyle a while back on the Royal Man Report, which you can still find at royalmanreport.com, just search for Greg Doyle, he did a great show with us, and he said that the Big 12 was going to die. There was no way that the Big 12 could live on. It's amazing now that you look at this, and yes, Texas, between the Longhorn Network and this, will be getting about $40 million a year for their programs, but $20 million for everybody else means that Kansas's sports programs are now on equal footing with somebody like Nebraska, who left the Big 12 for big money in the Big 10 and to get away from Texas. And this looks to be like something that is going to keep the Big 12 around essentially forever. And I said on Twitter earlier this week, Chuck Ninus saved this conference and got, and I apologize, I forget the man's name that's in charge now.
Bob Bowlsby.
They got him to take over for Ninus. But without Ninus, this conference dies. And he absolutely saved the Big 12. And they should build a statue to him out in front of the Big 12 offices. Because without Ninus, this league is dead. And so I think the Big 12 is in the right hands with Bowlsby. Ninus did some great things, and this contract really highlights a couple years of work. What are your initial thoughts on this contract, Jeff?
I mean, I think similar to what kind of what you were saying, I think it's great news for the Big 12. You know, there's any time you can have one of the biggest, most lucrative contracts in the country for any of the conferences, I think it's good. And to your point of, you know, I was with you a year ago. I thought the Big 12 was dead, and I was trying to say, you know, where can KU stake out a home for themselves? You know, it's got in a major conference. Who's going to want them? Who's going to take them? You know, because most of it's all built on football programs, which KU doesn't have a good one. So, you know, what was going to be their future? But now it actually looks like the Big 12 is in a really good situation, because not only do they have this huge contract, but then when it comes to expansion, I think a lot of teams were finding that, you know, I think the SEC is gonna notice it, and I think the Big East in a couple of years is going to notice, I'm sorry, not the Big East, the ACC in a couple of years is going to notice it as well, that the, you know, moving on beyond that 12-team kind of sweet spot is a little much. So 14 teams brings up a lot of difficulties in scheduling, you know, not only scheduling, but then you're expanding your reach, you know, your travel is going to be further and everything. So now with the Big 12 only having 10 teams, they're actually in a good position, because if there's going to be future expansion, then they more or less have two slots that they can easily fill without having too much trouble. You know, I mean, travel might be an issue if, say, Boise State wants to come along, but beyond that, you know, I think they're in that really good position. But then they're also in a situation now where, like you said, they've got 13 years where they're pretty much tied up, and they're going to be together, and there's no reason for them to expand. So it's definitely something where, you know, there were a lot of whispers over the summer about Florida State. Maybe they were going to be moving into the Big 12. And if that's something that Florida State wants to make that move and the Big 12 wants them, they can do it. But it's something that can be a very calculated move. You know, I think after Missouri and A&M left, the West Virginia and TCU, I mean, TCU was a natural fit just because all the Texas teams in the Big 12, but I think West Virginia was that kind of – it was on both West Virginia and Big 12. I want to say it was almost a semi-panic move, where it was West Virginia saw Syracuse and Pittsburgh bolting for the ACC in a few years and said Big East is dying and the Big East is in worse shape than the Big 12. We need to make something happen. Big 12 needed a team, pulled in West Virginia. And things seem to work out. And I mean, to be honest with you, I think of all the four teams that left, you know, your Nebraska, Mizzou, A&M, and Colorado over the last 10 years, I'd take West Virginia over all those teams in football and basketball. So I mean, I think that's a good move. But kind of off topic, more or less. But
no, I'm actually going to go there. So you're right on topic. So
and actually. But yeah, to answer your question, I mean, I think it's very good news for the conference.
You know, and I think I think it's great. I have nothing against the Big 12. Yes, I'm my school, Nebraska, was one of the schools that left, went to a different conference, and I like the Big Ten. It's good. I will miss the rivalries with Kansas, Kansas State, Missouri, Oklahoma. But you know, I say, and this is off topic, I say that as long as KU is refusing to play Missouri, Missouri should put Nebraska on their schedule as the first game every year at Arrowhead. I think it would be a great game. I think it'd be a great game to start the year every year. On the subject of expansion, maybe you know more than I do, but I didn't see anywhere in this contract that it allows for more money if they add more teams. So if they added more teams, each team would actually be giving up about $2 to $4 million in their money to bring these teams in. Is there some way that if you added, say, a Florida State that has the great Florida market, and if maybe you got real lucky and landed Notre Dame, who the Big Ten and Big 12 have been courting for, like, seems forever, if there was some way you could add those two teams, for example, two teams that have the ability to draw in a big number of households, which is all that matters. That's why Colorado State's in the Mountain West and Colorado's in the Pac-12, because they consider Boulder and Denver to be, you know, Colorado territory versus CSU territory, and that's why they're in the major conference. You know, if there's a way to get two big household teams like Florida State and Notre Dame, is there a way for, in this 13-year contract, for there to be more money allotted?
I think it's a very good question, and I mean, as stupid as the Big 12 was, say, 3 years ago when all this realignment talk, two and a half, 3 years ago or so, when this realignment talk first started, when MU and Nebraska were first talking about moving to the Big Ten, as many bad decisions as the Big 12 made consecutively there, I find it hard to believe that they wouldn't make a good decision when they negotiated this contract by saying if Big 12 were to expand and add more teams, then that would open up renegotiation for it. I think you'd have to be stupid not to put something like that in the contract. So now that said, you know, lots of, you know, smarter teams and organizations and everything in all sports have made stupid decisions before, so I wouldn't put it past them. But that said, that's a very good question. I do not know the answer to it, but I have to feel that there is some sort of contingency for that. So that way, you know, they can not only have the opportunity to make more money, but it's, if they want to bring somebody on board, it's lucrative for them. So they can say, hey, you're going to be making $20 a year, and they're not going to say, oh, we're just going to have to split it 11 ways or 12 ways or however many ways, whenever you bring in a team. So I think that's an important question. I don't know that I've heard the answer to it, but that is definitely something that I will be trying to find out in the next week or so as I try and kind of dig into that contract a little bit.
I think that kind of wraps the college sports news of the day. We're going to take another real quick break here on the recorded show. Obviously, the live show, we won't take any breaks. But we'll be right back, and we're gonna wrap up the day talking about the NFL and the weekend at hand, and maybe touch a little bit on the Giants-Cowboys game and if it means anything for the Cowboys, who have ended up one game short the last couple of years. We'll be right back on the Echo Sports Report.
Monday Night Mike.
In the last 2 years, all of the teams in the NFL, with the exception of the Chiefs, have made some sort of upgrade at quarterback or have maintained their franchise player.
If you're telling me this year in the draft that the Chiefs have the opportunity to trade two first-round picks along with their second-round pick both years for the number one overall pick to take Matt Barkley, I'm jumping on that. I am. Maybe I'm alone in that. Maybe most people think that's too much. I don't.
Listen to Monday Night Pikes live every Monday at econetwork.com.
And welcome back into the Echo Sports Report here on Saturday, the 8th of September. It is about 1 p.m. in the Central Time Zone. We are glad for those of you listening on the podcast. And if you're listening live, we love having you here. You can always find us at you can always find us on YouTube now at youtube.com/RoyalManReport. And that is where the show is going to be housed going forward as far as the live show goes. And that will be available immediately following the Kansas City Baseball Vault, which can also be found at RoyalManReport.com, on EchoNetwork.com, and on youtube.com/RoyalManReport. So join us every Saturday at noon. If there's any changes, you can We'll try to tweet them out from the Echo Network Twitter account, as well as the Kansas City Baseball Vault Twitter account. So join us at both of those locations. So it's the first weekend of real NFL football. How happy are you about this, Jeff?
I was thinking about this yesterday. I don't know that I've ever said to myself in my life, you know, on a day like today or yesterday, I don't know that I've ever made the statement, man, I can't believe football season's already here. You know, it's one of those things where football season never sneaks up. I don't think it sneaks up on anybody at this point, but it never has on me. I'm always ready for it, waiting for it. So excited. I can't wait to get out there, Arrowhead, tomorrow. It's going to be rocking, you know, whether the Chiefs win or lose opening weekend. And the expectations are decently high for the Chiefs this year. So I'm pretty excited to be out there. It's going to be a great atmosphere. And I'm excited to see some NFL football. And the only thing I'm not excited for is my girlfriend to not like me on Sundays for the rest of the next 4 months, because I'm all about football for 6 hours a day. So other than that, I'm incredibly excited, and she's going to a conference for her job tomorrow, so I'll have all day after the Chiefs game to soak in as much football as I want. So definitely excited.
And Verizon's got, not an advertisement for Verizon or anything, but they've got a great NFL app that I think for like $5 you can follow all the games right on your phone, and it's freaking amazing. I had it 2 years ago. I passed on it last year, but I have a nice 4G phone this year. I think I'm going to fire it up again. I'm not.
What is it?
It's, if you own a Verizon phone, Verizon has like an official NFL app, and for $5 or $10 you can get every game on your phone.
Like every, in what format?
Honestly, I haven't checked it out this year. I shouldn't have even said anything. I haven't played around with it much this year, but in years past, it was the Red Zone channel all the time, plus the NFL Network. So it was, you just watched it on your phone. It was live streaming. It was pretty fantastic.
So you get Red Zone for only $5?
Yeah.
That's incredible, because that's like, I mean, that package is ridiculously expensive for DirecTV.
Yeah, if you have a Verizon phone, check it out. And especially with phones the way they are, you can go buy a $20 kit to plug your phone into your HDTV, and then it's the same thing, and run it right through your Wi-Fi and be just as happy with it. So
they did the same thing for Sprint back when Sprint had that NFL app, and I had I was able to watch NFL Network through that. So I do remember that now that I think about it. But yeah, that's pretty sweet.
But back to what we were talking about. It is NFL Sunday. Let me see here. We'll do a wraparound kind of like we did with the college football. We talked about the Chiefs and Atlanta in the beginning of the show. So we'll let you hang on to that one. What I feel will be the biggest contender in the AFC outside of KC, because I think KC's got a real chance to win the division, as do a lot of experts. Pittsburgh goes into Detroit. Ryan Clady, I think I'm saying that name right, unable to play for Pittsburgh because it's Clady, isn't it?
He's for Denver. Are you thinking of what position?
Isn't there a defensive back that can't play in Denver because he's got problems with his spine or something? Hold on, I'll professional.
Well, Ryan Clady plays for the Broncos, yeah.
What do you think about this Broncos-Pittsburgh game? It looks like Pittsburgh is supposed to have one of the best defenses in football again, and the Steelers are supposed to have one of the biggest defenses again. But the Steelers are going in already banged up. Broncos look healthy. Of course, the big question is can Peyton's neck stay well? Some of the experts, like the ESPN injury experts, Stefania Bell says that he should be fine. It's unlikely he would get hurt again. But it's just hard for me to believe that a man going in with a neck injury, who I have on my Dynasty League team, and I am starting over Jay Cutler this week, so I hope I don't live to regret that, is going to be able to handle the pressures that go with, one, having a new team, two, having a banged-up neck. How do you see this Pittsburgh-Denver game panning out?
It's hard to say. I mean, it's so hard to make predictions first week of the season because you never know what to expect, especially in the NFL, more so than college football. But, I'm honestly very skeptical. Anybody who read my preseason power rankings on Echo Network will know that I am very, very skeptical of the Broncos, and I think their defense is overrated, and I think that when you look at Peyton Manning, and you know, I wanted him on the Chiefs, and I think he's going to be just fine. He's going to have a very good year, but I also kept in mind, even so, for the Chiefs, that I mean, his skills were diminishing even before he got his injury. You know, he's 36 years old now, and if you look at that 2010 season, which was his last full season, last playing time of any sort, I mean, they were 10-6. They were just a playoff team, yeah, but I mean, they were in a weak division at the time, and you could tell his skills weren't quite as sharp as they were in, say, 2006 when they won the Super Bowl. So, I mean, his skills are declining, and his ability to be the reason why a team wins 10 plus games, and the only reason, is much, much lower than it was 3-4 years ago, 5 years ago. And I think that's important, you know, because when you take Peyton Manning out of the equation, so take the Chiefs and the Broncos and say, take Peyton Manning and Matt Cassel out of the equation and say, who are you more comfortable with from a roster standpoint minus those two players? And I think 100% people would pick the Chiefs. So the question is, how much of a difference does Peyton Manning make over Matt Cassel? And I mean, the answer is a lot, but since the Broncos were already starting further back, is he going to be able to take them even further? And I'm skeptical, to be honest. I don't know that it will be. And I think going up against a very good defense and a team that is going to be, offensively, the Steelers are what they always are. You know, Ben Roethlisberger is going to be able to make some plays. They've got, you know, Mike Wallace is back now. They've got Antonio Brown. You know, their running game is probably going to be, you know, decent like it always is, and you know, strong enough to allow them to win. So I don't see the Broncos necessarily winning the game, but obviously I wouldn't put it past them. I think it's going to be a good matchup.
A couple of notes for Pittsburgh, and I think this is where it does give Denver a little bit of an advantage, is Harrison will be out. He has been ruled out for the game, and, you know, being the star linebacker for Pittsburgh, that's going to be a big loss, losing James Harrison from their team. They're also going to be without David DeCastro, who is one of their offensive linemen, and Sylvester, who has a knee injury. He's an inside linebacker. It looks like Rashard Mendenhall will be back, though. He has practiced all week. And the guy that I was trying to think of originally was Ryan Clark, who has a sickle cell anemia and can't play in Denver because the altitude affects him. So that's a big loss for them, losing their safety from the team as well, which you can almost count on every game that they won't have him. So I think that's the most important game to those of us that listen here in Kansas City. For those a little more national, Dallas beat the Giants. And, I mean, Dallas really took it to the Giants in New York. Are the Cowboys reborn? Are they an instant contender after seeing that game, or is it overreaction theater?
You know, I think the Cowboys are contenders just as they have been for the last 3 or 4 years, and I think they've underperformed the last few years. And I mean, I had this team ranked in my top 10. I can't remember off the top of my head where I had I want to say I had them. I was like my number 6 team. Is that right? Let's pull this up and see what I have. But, I mean, I think the Cowboys have all the talent there. I had them as my number 4 team in the league. I think talent-wise, they've got one of the most talented rosters, and they find themselves in a position that the San Diego Chargers have for the last 5 years, where they've had just an incredibly talented roster, and maybe not the last 5 years for the Chargers, but from that 2004 to 2009-10 range even, they've year in, year out, one of the most talented rosters in the league and just never put it together. And they had some really good seasons, a couple playoff victories, but nothing, you know, worth noting. And Cowboys are kind of falling into that same mold. Now, I mean, I don't know if maybe this is going to be the year that they're putting together. I think it's too early to tell. The Giants are known for getting off to some bad starts, and they in the last few years, that's what they've kind of done. They've eked into the playoffs, and I mean, would you be surprised to see the Giants at 9-7 or 10-6 again squeak into the playoffs and then all of a sudden become the most dangerous team? at this point, with the Giants, the way their run is gone, I don't think that would surprise anybody. But, you know, I don't know how real the Cowboys are, but I think they're a team more than capable of winning that 10-12 games and getting into the playoffs. And I have them as a better team than the Giants anyway. So I wasn't surprised. Maybe I was a little surprised about how dominant. I didn't watch the game. I was at the Royals game, but to see how more or less dominant the Cowboys seemed was a little surprising, but I don't think seeing them winning the game was all that surprising.
Well, I think this was a great move for Dallas. They've had a lot of trouble. Romo still is a quarterback that throws a lot of interceptions. Reminds me Jake the Snake Plumber in Denver. He was a great quarterback, but he'd always throw an interception at the worst time and cost you a game. And I think that's what you get in Romo. So I think he's going to continue to struggle, but for at least 1 week, the Cowboys are number one in that division, and that's a big win for them because the Giants snuck in by one game last year to the playoffs, knocking Dallas out of it, and then went on to win the whole thing. So that was huge. A game that's going to have a lot of question marks on Sunday is Indianapolis versus Chicago. Of course, Indianapolis probably, I'm not positive on this, but has to be one of the youngest, if not the youngest team in football. Luck, Fleener, a lot of really good talent that's going to get a first-year shot here. Chicago, of course, has Brandon Marshall now, and so it'll be interesting to see what those two bring. A quick wraparound on everything else we're going to see. Philly versus Cleveland. Philly should walk that game pretty easy. Detroit versus St. Louis at Detroit. Everybody except for St. Louis fans are picking Detroit for that one. The Titans will face off against New England. That could be one of the games of the week. It's in Tennessee. I think both those teams are pretty good, but I think – is that one that you think will go to the visiting Patriots way?
I think the Patriots, I think they're still, until proven otherwise, one of the class teams of the AFC. I think the Titans are on the rise, and I think a lot of it's going to depend on how quickly Jake Locker can mature. I mean, I think he showed some good things last year, and don't know that he's shown really all that he is and all that he can be. So we'll see, and I don't know if that's a tall order going up against the Patriots for his first game, but you know, the quicker he can develop, the quicker the Titans can become a force in that AFC South there.
Jacksonville goes into Minnesota. Neither of those teams. It's not going to be much of a game. Another game I want to just talk quickly about is Washington at New Orleans. If you haven't heard, New Orleans got their defense back. And yeah, that makes them an instant contender. They were already a contender with Drew Brees at quarterback. But now, I mean, all they don't have is their head coach at this point of things that really matter. Getting their defense back, I don't see any way that Washington can come out and RG3 can win that game. I think he's going to be on the ground a lot. New Orleans is going to look really good in that game. And that defense, even though they haven't practiced together a lot, I don't believe they've been able to practice while they've been on the suspension, I still expect that team to come out hungry and to just go through the Redskins.
Yeah, I mean, I think they could have won easily even without those defensive players. I mean, the Redskins are just not a good team. So even without some of their best defensive players, the Saints still a very good team. The question is, how much of an impact did Sean Payton really have? Because for the last few years, ever since they won a Super Bowl and even before that, everyone was talking about how he was that wonder boy, one of the next great coaches in the league. So now that he's gone, are they really going to say, oh, it doesn't matter all that much? You know, I mean, I read an article on Grantland by Bill Simmons where he was saying that that brought up that point that I thought was interesting. You know, it's true. You know, how valuable do you think Sean Payton is? And not only that, I mean, not only do they have an interim coach for the whole year, and they have an interim coach for their interim coach for the first 6 weeks. So it's just a weird situation. You got to wonder how that kind of disorganization and unfamiliarity that the Saints are going to have with whoever's coaching is going to come into play. You know, I mean, I don't think it turns them into like a 4-12 team, but would it be at all surprising to see them win in the 7-9 range, 7 wins to 9 wins? I don't think that would be at all surprising because I don't know that it can be downplayed too much, how, you know, the loss of their head coach and those people on the coaching staff.
I think Drew Brees will lead the offense. He's smart enough. He's been in the league long enough that he can be an on-field coach. And Peyton Manning's done it for years in Indy, and you've seen where the coaches don't even send plays into Peyton. He just takes care of it all. I think you'll see more of that on the offense. I think the defense will have some questions, but I absolutely see New Orleans making the playoffs, if not winning their division. A game between a couple of teams that will probably end up mediocre is Buffalo at the Jets, and you'll get 14 hours of coverage of that game because Tim Tebow plays for the Jets. Tebow's a good man, but I'm really tired of hearing about the Jets this season. Both these teams need to win this game to get themselves off to the right foot because they're going to need every win if they're going to make the playoffs. Miami goes into Houston. Houston's looking like a team bound for the playoffs. Miami's looking like a team that still has a lot of work to do. It'll be interesting to see. One of the Sunday afternoon games, they've moved Sunday afternoon games to 4:25 Eastern now, a little later start, so that'll be great for people like you and I that like to catch as much as we can. There'll actually be a decent break in there, 3:25 Central time. San Francisco plays Green Bay. Is this one of the games that you're really looking forward to this week?
I think so. I think Green Bay's the best team in the NFL. I think Aaron Rodgers is the best quarterback in the NFL. They've got to be Super Bowl favorites again, and that might not be the, you know, that might be the boring pick, but I don't know what else you want me to say, you know, when it comes to that, because the Packers are, you know, they're just really good, and they spent their weakness last year was the defense, which they spent a lot of time in the offseason trying to improve, and then so their strength being the offense is going to go up against San Francisco's strength, which is their defense, and their defense is real, real good. They are stacked with a lot of really good players, and they're an elite defense. Very well could be the best defense in the league. Jim Harbaugh has shown himself to be a very good coach. You know, the question with them, the same deal as the Chiefs. You know, with the Chiefs, it's Matt Castle. With the 49ers, it's Alex Smith. Is he for real? Was last year for real? Can he do it again? Can he get better? If he can, then this could be an NFC Championship game preview going into the playoffs with both these teams being dominant through the year. So I'm definitely – this would be a good game to see.
And this is a game that's actually featured on ESPN.com's NFL page and talking about the 49ers expect nothing less than to make the Super Bowl. Well, if that's the case, you've got to win this game. So I think this will be an exciting game. And I think the winner of this game puts themselves on the right foot to head into – you know, obviously there's 15 more weeks after this and a lot can go wrong, but – a win here really does set yourself up for having a good position to try to get home field throughout the playoffs because there's a very good possibility that this is your 1-2 in the NFC with New Orleans, I think, at 3. So it'll be interesting to see what happens with these guys.
Definitely.
Seattle goes into Arizona. That's going to be a bad game, I think. Arizona's a bad team. Seattle actually has a chance to run up some points. It might be exciting from that aspect. Carolina goes to Tampa Bay again, not a very exciting game. A good rivalry game in week one, Cincinnati versus Baltimore. Baltimore will be, I'm sure, honoring Art Modell, who died earlier this week. Both these teams okay, but Baltimore should probably win that one pretty easily. And then and then Monday Night Football is San Diego. I'm sorry, there's two Monday Night Football games because it's the first week. Cincinnati at Baltimore and San Diego at Oakland. Oakland really wants to make a statement and show that they're for real, and because everybody's put them at last in the division. There's been people that have said, well, the Broncos can win the West, the Chargers can win the West, the Chiefs can win the West, and Oakland's just funny. And so they're not getting much respect. They'd really like to win that game at home against San Diego. Do you think Oakland has a chance to be for real this year? Can Carson Palmer lead this team to anything more than a fourth-place finish in the West?
No, I mean, more than fourth place finish, yeah. I don't know that they're necessarily contenders to win the division. He's just not what he once was. He never has been after that injury, that knee injury he got in 05. And, you know, it's unfortunate because he was a really good quarterback, but, you know, that's the way it goes. And Oakland, I mean, they're on the right track now. I mean, you hate to kind of put it this way, but now that Al Davis has passed away, they're on the right track. They're making a lot of right decisions, but they've just been so screwed up for so long and so weird with how they did business and how they did everything that it's going to take a couple of years to clean up. And with this being that first year, they got a brand new coach, they got a new GM, they don't have any draft picks, didn't do very much in free agency. I mean, there's a lot that this team needs to do to clean themselves up and make them into a winning organization, and I mean, there's obviously a chance for them to win because anytime you have a division rivalry game, that's the way it goes. But I don't see that Oakland making that much of themselves this year.
Well, I think it's going to be an exciting football season, and we'll be doing an NFL recap and preview every week going forward as we will continue to air on Saturdays, and then you'll get the podcast probably sometime Sunday. It's going to be a great season for football. It's nice to be able to be excited in Kansas City. Hopefully 4 weeks in, we're not just recapping every other team and hoping for whatever other team we adopt because the Chiefs are out of it. Hopefully the Chiefs can stay strong and play a big part in this. It will be a good year, I think, for football as a whole, and I'm really excited with the directions of both NFL and college football. I kind of took this show a different route this week without even telling Jeff. It was kind of a last-second decision to try it this way. Let us know what you think at romanreport@gmail.com or find us on Twitter at Echo Network or at The Jeff Report or at Casey Royal Man. Jeff, any closing thoughts?
No, I'm with you. I'm excited to get this football season underway and finally have more to talk about other than just speculation.
Until next week, go check out everything that's going on in Echo Network. Remember, it's not just a sports site, so if you have friends that are into politics or there's a political reporter that writes on there, we got movie reviews, all sorts of crazy stuff going on there. Maybe someday I'll finally get around to writing the What Would Review articles that Chris wanted me to write months ago. But check it out, echonetwork.com, and we'll be right back here on the Echo Sports Report next Saturday, along with the Kansas City Baseball Belt. So until then, for Jeff Hurst, I'm Troy Olson. Have a great week, everybody, and enjoy your football Sunday.